welcome to a Saturday edition of Unraveling the Matrix here on December 7th, 2013, Pearl Harbor Day. I guess that was a bit of reality. Speaking of which, today's show, I'm going to have my good friend Vinny Eastwood from the Vinny Eastwood Show is going to be calling in, and we're going to be discussing reality. What is reality? The philosophy of reality, the physics of reality, the biology of reality, because all those things tie together and correlate when you're talking about what is real. I visited this a while ago with my lovely co-host, Lisa, Liberty Lisa, and it was kind of an interesting show, and actually, my friend Vinny posted on his Facebook wall, and that got my mind turning again to revisit this topic. He was discussing about reality and basically these New Age philosophies about reality, but a lot of these things that people call New Age, in fact, are really very old age. A lot of these things are derived from philosophies that were actually in place before Christianity, way, way back. I mean, this has been a philosophical problem that man has been visiting for basically since he could think and comprehend and perceive the world around him. He has always struggled with what is real, what is reality. There's people out there that believe reality and the universe or multiverse or matter, everything out there is really an illusion or a dream that we perceive, which is pretty interesting. Very quite interesting. I mean, if you're going to talk about the philosophy of reality and the science of reality, they actually tie together. I mean, if you look at the dynamic unity of reality, you can go back to Plato from the Republic in 380 BC. His quote, "And those whose hearts are fixed on reality itself deserve the title of philosophers." All the way up to a quote from Karl Popper from 1975. "Denying realism amounts to megalomania, the most widespread occupational disease of the professional philosopher." Ah, and there is my friend right now. Looks like he's calling in on Skype. How are you doing today, Vinny?
I'm so much better now that I'm here with you, to be honest.
What was that?
I'm so much better now that I'm here with you, to be honest.
Oh, that's good. So you're perceiving a reality of a good show today?
Well, I'll see how it pans out, because only once you've observed it will the wave function collapse and you find out exactly what you're dealing with.
Oh, the old wave. Well, actually, wave function is constantly collapsing, and that is really the whole perception of motion and what and things around us and things we see constantly collapsing. That's a good point. You come right out of the box swinging. I'm very proud of you.
Well, what is reality? And let's say that scene from The Matrix. If you're thinking about what you can see, what you can sense, what you can touch, then reality is simply electrical signals that are interpreted by your brain. So if you think about that, then you take a look at another scene from The Matrix where he talks about how the agents are the ones that are holding all the are guarding all the doors, they're holding all the keys, and men have emptied entire clips at them and hit nothing but air. But despite that ability that they have, they still live in a world that is based on rules. Because of that fact, you can never be as fast or as strong as you can be. Now, I think that what's happening here is we got this split, and people think that reality and perception are completely separate. Do you believe that, Austin? That one exists and one doesn't, and they don't work in congruence, in tandem, and have these wonderful intersections where they both grow and change together?
Well, they actually do work together, and that is the conundrum that you face, because if you can't perceive something, it can't be real. But it's not real until you perceive it.
I'm maybe from an individual perspective, like, for example, there's a lot of people who perceive that the New Zealand government is the least corrupt country in the world, and that's because they were lied to by Transparency International. Now, I know that for a fact. It has nothing to do with perception. You know, just being uninformed doesn't mean that the information ain't out there.
Well, this is true, but when your brain basically has electrical and chemical stimulation, and you have this thing called a perception, you perceive things around you. Are they really around you, or are they just inside of your mind, inside of your brain?
Now, would that be, let's say, for example, you theorize that, as many scientists have, that we currently live on a hologram, all right? Now,
right.
That means everything's a projection, right? It's not real. It's a subjective experience. Let's say you're not real, I'm not real, but both of us somewhere else are actually real, plugged into a machine where we're experiencing full-on virtual reality because we're here for a purpose, for a reason. There's a game being played here. There are games afoot, right? Would you agree to that? If that theory was true, there's a lot of people that do believe that.
I think it's a little deeper than that. You're basically going to the old brain in the vat. Have you ever seen that, like, video or heard that analogy?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
So if your brain is in a vat and it's being stimulated with chemical and electrical signals, your brain can still perceive a reality even if it's in a vat. So if your brain was in a vat and it was stimulated for you to walk, talk, feel, touch, love, taste, those things are still real, right? Or are they?
Technically, they wouldn't be, because there's no actual physical thing. The only thing that really exists there is the brain. The experiences, on the other hand, and experiences are a different thing to reality in some ways. Like, let's say, for example, it's an interpretation. If you look at an experience, let's say, in my life, where I quit my job and became a radio host and a filmmaker and what have you, I physically had to suffer for years, extraordinary poverty, in order to get to a point where I've got enough credibility in people's eyes where they'd contribute to my show and help me continue in my operation, right? So you see cause and effect.
Correct.
You know, and here's the thing. Cause and effect seems to exist, but the thing is, your perception can change those cause and effects. So let's say the experiment that you posted on Facebook, the double slit experiment, and for the listening audience that don't know, it's basically they shoot marbles through a slit, you know, just a metal slit or whatever, and it forms a pattern in the background around about the shape of the slit, right? Now they start sending...
That's actually light particles.
Yeah, I was kind of going to get to that next. First part of the experiment is you've got a single slit. They shoot marbles, hits the wall on behind them. Second experiment was when you do two slits, and then instead of sending particles or marbles through it, you send water through it. And now, instead of just forming one pattern behind it as it did with the slit and the marbles, you find that it has an actual wave pattern, so that two of the waves coming through each of the slits would cancel each other out, and that it becomes unpredictable, the pattern that happens behind it, because there's a whole lot of different changes and variants that are going on within these waves, all overlapping each other, going at different speeds, different heights, what have you. So you get something that appears kind of random. Then they evolve the experiment a bit to use two slots and shoot electrons through it. Now, what they found was that when you shoot the electrons through the two slots, you get the same pattern in the background as what happened with the waves rather than the marbles. And so they're like, how does that happen? How do you make small little particles split into sort of like waves, right? So they put a little observer right next to one of the slots, and they found that it changed the pattern. So the mere fact that somebody was there to observe how the pattern was really come together changed the pattern in and of itself. Now, what this teaches us is a very important lesson, that when you're looking at something, it changes it to a degree. It doesn't change the total form of it. Like, an electron doesn't morph into a Tyrannosaurus Rex in front of your eyes just because you're looking at it. It's not crazy like that. It's got a quantum effect, which has lots of little, what they call possibilities, right? There's possibilities and probabilities. Yeah? You believe in possibilities and probabilities, right? Right? So it's a possibility that I might... Yeah?
Well, yeah, I mean the everything is probabilities. I mean, no matter how minute the probability is, weird things can happen, especially when you get into the quantum world. I mean, really freaky stuff happens when you get down into the quantum world, that's for sure.
However, you can't perceive the quantum world, can you, unless you've got measurement devices and what have you in this realm that we've invented in this reality. I think that there are many, many forms of reality, and that I'm currently living a subjective experience. Now, whether or not it's real, I think, is inconsequential, because I look at it like a computer game. When you're playing any computer game, there is an objective. There's points, there's scores, there's big bosses at the end of the levels, and so on and so forth. Your character grows and shapes himself, gets stronger, has new equipment, and what have you to bring to the fold. So I think of it, if we were part of a hologram, then I think whether or not we are part of a hologram becomes inconsequential, that we're thinking of outside of the box so much that we forget that we still have a game to play here.
Well, you can look at it this way. I mean, it is consequential whether your perception is reality or reality is what you perceive. Because if you look at your video game, say that everything is a holographic experience in the world you live in. Your perception can change the hologram.
But it can't change the fact that it is or isn't a hologram, can it?
No, you can't change the fact. Hypotheticals we're speaking in. But if you're part of a holographic universe, if you change your perception or how you perceive this holographic universe, in reality, you can change reality.
Okay, that just sounds like circular reasoning. I perceive that I change reality, therefore my perception changes reality. That doesn't seem to stack up. But can I explain a little bit about what you've said there? Because it's interesting and it bears looking upon. Because it means that your perception is very important, However, it can't create things out of the ether, right? There's this reality that's here that exists whether or not you perceive it, but you can change it in many, many ways. Not crazy fanciful ways, like you can't just perceive that the cow is a horse and then the cow magically materializes into a horse. It's not like that kind of thing. It's more like
unless you're on some really good LSD or DMT or something, I mean, then you really
can. But even then, the drug wears off and you realize you're still just looking at a cow. It's not a horse, after all.
Touché, good point.
All right. So this is the thing about collapsing the wave function and how important your perception is in doing so. It doesn't mean that the waves don't exist before you perceive that they exist. What it means is that the effect of the waves only is perceivable once you've observed them. Okay, this is one of the most important points. It means that we're living in a moment, a continuous moment. My belief is that this moment that we're living in right now is a congruent one. So it's continuous. It goes all the way back throughout eternity and will continue all the way up through the fullness of time, right?
Well,
so at the moment...
I want to break this down while we're on this point is all that really is now and now and now and now. There is no past. There is no future. Everything is the present.
That's not true. I think that there is definitely a present and there is definitely a past, but the future is what is yet to come. That's the potential, okay? So we talked about that wave function and that slit experiment and that it only collapses the wave function and becomes literal once it's been observed, okay? So same thing with the future. The future hasn't happened yet. Right now we have all of these different possibilities, all of these different ways from which our perception can actually change what will become the future. Although we'll never see it, because the only thing that we have is right now. We can look backwards and have records of things that have happened and how our perceptions have changed them, but we can't really predict with 100% accuracy what it's going to be. For instance, the scientists in this double split experiment, they couldn't predict, even with the greatest supercomputers in the world, I'd wager, the exact impact points of those electrons on the foil behind the two slits before they happened. They could only observe them after the fact. That is the important difference between perception and reality. That is the bridge. We're capable of making reality as it happens, but we can't change what has happened, and we can't see what is going to happen.
Well, that goes to my point, that all there is the now, the present. If you look at things in the world of physics, all that is now. You can't have a future or there is no past because everything is in the now.
That's not true, because you can make electronic devices, you can do things that are based upon scientific principles that repeat the exact same patterns, all right? So they create an iPhone that works when you turn it on. It sends messages when you click the button. It takes calls when you swipe, that kind of thing. So this is what physics, electronics, and the major sciences has able to harness, is they've able to harness the ability of knowledge to replicate things in a reliable fashion in the real world. On a quantum level, that doesn't work quite the same, but the thing is, we wouldn't know that at a quantum level had these scientists not, in reality, invented these devices by which we can measure these things that are happening in the quantum, just like the observer made collapsing the wave function. You see what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, but the whole problem is when you have the observer involved, the observer becomes part of the observation himself. So
yeah.
The observer's perception is changing reality.
Yeah, That's what I'm saying, is that you can change reality, but you can't make it magical, and it doesn't mean that reality doesn't exist. It doesn't mean that the observer doesn't exist, all right? Even if they didn't exist, it wouldn't be an experiment in the first place, so this conversation would never happen if it didn't really exist. I mean, let's take our radio broadcast, for instance. I get up in the morning, have coffee and toast or whatever, and I do a two-hour radio show. Then I edit it and put it up online, okay? My perception didn't do that. I did that because I know that I have to. I've got to be there by a certain time. There's some bit of technology working that's running that I have to kind of insert myself into in order to create something. However, during the radio show, when I'm interviewing somebody, it's all up in the air. We could go anywhere.
Right.
Yeah? But we wouldn't be able to go anywhere if I didn't physically make myself sit in the damn chair and start the recording.
But you have to look at it this way, too. If you didn't perceive that you were going to put all these tools into play, there would be, again, no radio show because there would be no perception. And if your listeners and viewers couldn't perceive and put together those collapsing wave functions and those lights weren't physically in your brain, chemically and electrically stimulated from your eyes and your auditory, your ears, there would be nothing. It wouldn't be real.
Well, you've actually just proved my point without knowing it, because I'm saying that my perception made me do all of these things, but the difference is my perception didn't move my arms, my perception didn't click the buttons, my perception didn't create these Skype platforms and the internet and everything. I didn't create the internet. I didn't play any part in it. I didn't create Skype. I didn't play any part in it. I didn't create American Freedom Radio. I didn't create Freedomizer Radio. But here I am nonetheless using those things that have been created before me. Right? They physically exist. They're there to utilize. And I can then change what they're utilized for using my perception. Okay? Much like reality is a lump of clay, and your perception is the artisan's hands that shape it into a beautiful vase. But the vase could not be there without the clay in the first place, and the vase would not be turned into a vase without the perception. Okay, so there is not, it's not one or the other.
Let me flip that back around, then I'll let you finish. If you didn't perceive the lump of clay, is it really there?
Well, I don't know. Did JFK perceive getting shot in the back of the head?
Well, yes, of course he did, as painful as it was, and in that instant, yes, he perceived it. He knew what happened.
Yeah, but the thing is, again, that's back to circular reasoning. Oh, it couldn't have happened without me perceiving it. And I just want to know, how powerful do you think perception is? Okay, do me an experiment right now and make something magical happen with your perception, Austin. Make something magical happen.
Me just looking in the room and speaking is magical. It's part of my perception.
But you can't change it. You can't change it, can you?
Yeah, I can. I can change my voice.
Okay, you can change your voice. How much else, what other stuff can you change with your perception? How far does it go? How powerful is your perception? Are you capable of, say, blowing up a cruise ship liner with your mind at this particular point because your perception's that strong? Are you capable of levitating one of the listeners off of their chair? Are you capable of... there are limits. There are limits. Because there are limits to what your perception can accomplish, it means that it is not the only thing that exists. Okay? Reality exists with or without your ability to perceive that it exists. And Ayn Rand once said, You can ignore reality, but you cannot ignore the consequences of ignoring reality.
Oh, pull the Ayn Rand card. Very good. But, and you came prepared, Vinny. I'm very proud of you. This is going to be an interesting show. Very interesting show. I mean...
Yeah, well, that was my perception of it anyway.
I mean, let's delve a little bit into we've been a little bit of science, a little bit of philosophy. I mean, if you look at reality, it's basically a conglomeration of three things. It's going to be physics, biology. And what would you say the third and most important thing would be about reality, Vinny?
What's the most important thing about free will? You can change reality. Absolutely. Absolutely. You can totally change it. Like, we had this woman named Pip Cunningham, if you search her name up on my YouTube channel. She hadn't seen her daughter in, like, 4 years, 5 years or something like that, you know, her beautiful daughter that the child kidnapping services in New Zealand took from her. And I said to her, you know what, let's have a protest outside that child kidnapping racket we call Child, Youth and Family Services. Let's get a 100-watt megaphone out there. Let's get some cameras and some microphones, and we're going to film ourselves protesting these people, calling them a pedophile ring, but they are, and we'll see what happens. And not a day after the protest videos come out, she got contacted by her daughter for the first time in 4 years. She didn't even know whether or not she was alive when we did that protest. That was how little information that those family services got out there. Now, because my perception determined that this woman needed help, I decided that I would use my perception to come up with a plan that I had to put into action in order for it to work. I couldn't just sit back and think about helping this woman and have her actually be helped. Thinking about things doesn't actually accomplish a whole lot in most cases. It's your actions that determine how much influence you can impact reality. Your actions indeed can shape it very, very hugely. Some cases, very few, minor cases, you can actually make something magical happen. Like something that science can't explain. I can go out and do things because a scientist invented the camera, he invented the computer, he invented the internet. So I've been given all these real tools by which I can go out and make real videos with real people. However, if I didn't care enough to put it into action, if I was sitting in a bubble and thinking that, oh, this is all virtual reality, there's no point doing anything anyway because it doesn't really exist, I would have never helped her, and she would have never gotten back in contact with her daughter. But because I took action, because I took personal responsibility, because I allowed my thoughts to flow and forced them, not thought about them, but forced them into reality, that's what I accomplished.
Well, there is no doubt that perception is a major tool. I mean, you could tie perception into basically consciousness, perception. These are tools, but I mean, these are tools that we use. Perception is a tool, and realizing that I have to use my hands to push these buttons. I have to use my mouth to speak. I have to use my eyes to see. And to correlate all this information around me to make something like your story with the lady getting in touch with her daughter. You had to perceive a plan of action before you actually executed it. So you perceived
exactly.
It, then you went in, then you actually did it.
Exactly. But I didn't just perceive it, and it happened all on its own.
Well, no, and that this was what we were talking about on the thread the other day. I mean, you can perceive bad and painful things just as well as you can perceive good things. It's still a matter of perception.
Not really. I believe that there is an objective truth that good and evil exist. I could be wrong, okay? Somebody could come up with some evidence tomorrow that could prove me wrong, and I'll change my belief on a dime. But for now, I believe that good and evil exists. Do you believe that good and evil exists, Austin?
Oh, absolutely.
Because you can perceive both. Because I spoke to a guy on the radio the other day who shares many of the same philosophical beliefs that you're espousing on the show today. And he did not believe in good and evil at all. He didn't believe in anything. He said that nothing existed of any kind, and you can't make a difference by doing anything. And I was like, well, hold on a second here. If you don't believe in good and evil, can I ask you how you're living your life? When was the last time you participated in child sacrifice? You say, oh, I've never done it. Well, when was the last time you stole something from somebody? Well, I don't do that either. Well, hold on. If you don't believe, like, in good or evil, then why aren't you doing just as much good as you are evil? See? You're not actually living by your mantra, are you? That's why it's BS, because there is something really dark and evil out there. And it's only once you are capable of recognizing that it exists, you know, through admitted documents, personal experiences, whether they be spiritual or physical experiences, I think it matters not, you can still wind up coming to the same conclusions from many, many different paths through life. You know, you've had great difference. I mean, and that therefore there's something that somebody called consensus reality. Oh, so many people, X amount of people perceive that exists, therefore it exists. I don't think so. I think it's about recognition of those parts.
The old collective consciousness argument.
Yeah. And it's like the collective consciousness has powers, sure. You know, there's been plenty of experiments where I think there was in Washington, D.C., they had 3,000 people. I believe this might have been in 2003 or at some point. I don't know. But they were wanted to drop the murder rate in Washington, D.C., which is the murder capital of the world, by 30%. And the chief of the Washington police said it would take 6 feet of snow to change the murder rate like that. So, sure enough, these 3,000 people meditated, and the crime rate dropped. So, there's some power in the collective consciousness. However, they didn't stop murder altogether, right? Now,
no.
Theoretically speaking, what if we had, instead of 3,000 people accomplishing 30%, what if we had 100,000 people accomplishing 100%? Murder reduction. Would that be possible? Let's say 100,000 people on Earth every day, or 100 million, however many it takes, statistically speaking, to meditate all day into making everybody on Earth stop killing each other. Would it work? I don't think so. I think we can have a massive effect, but we can't have a total effect, because there are still people
who do not share his
motivations.
I agree with you. I mean, like, I believe in God. So I believe that the power of prayer is amazing. And that, I guess, if you could look at that as like a collective consciousness or whatever. But I still think that it's possible through the power of prayer to influence things. I'm not saying to totally turn something around.
That was my fault. I mean, sometimes I accidentally hang up on the Skype call because the mute button and the hang up are so close together. I I didn't hear what you just said, but I heard the last of what you said, and I totally agree with it, that you can change things with prayer, but you can't change things in their utter essence and entirety. So, for example, do you remember that time when George Bush choked on a bagel and fell over and got a black eye or something on a coffee table? It was years ago. And everybody was laughing their asses off, absolutely happy that George Bush had a black eye for something. Now, I'm sure that there were plenty of people that were just praying diligently, night after night, "Dear Lord, please make George Bush choke on a bagel and get a black eye on a presidential coffee table today. Please, Lord. Don't ask for much. I don't ask for much. I just a little help, God. It's all I'm asking for. Just a little help." And then, boom!
Well, we could flip that around to Obama, too, or Obama, as I like to call him, too. I mean, I really believe, they were on the verge of making a move in Syria, and it was pressure from the alternative media, people like us, but I think it was the power of prayer, collective consciousness, all these things put undue influence, and I think that really kept us from really pulling the trigger and moving into Syria. I really do.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That could be.
And this goes to illustrate the point that you've got a whole lot of influences on reality and a whole lot of influences on perception. And what's really dangerous is people being very carte blanche about it. You know, my perception is everything that there is. Reality is everything that there is. Both those perspectives are very, very wrong because they deny tens of thousands of different other influences that are out there that occur whether or not you're aware of them, right? So let's say, for example, outside right now in my garden, there's worms churning up the soil. In the trees, there are birds eating bugs. There are spiders catching flies. There are X amount of things going on. I can't see it.
Right, yeah.
I presume
your whole backyard and that tree in your backyard is its own little ecosystem. There's no doubt about it.
Exactly. And that ecosystem occurs with or without my attention, right? However, if I do go and then pay it attention, not only do I then find out precisely what's going on in that ecosystem, but I can also change it. I can make things happen. I can plant new objects and what have you. And I think these are these two important congruences between perception and reality that I think people miss, right? They think that reality doesn't exist without perception, and some people believe perception doesn't exist without reality. I believe that neither exist without each other.
The old duality, the yin-yang thing.
I'm not sure if it's yin-yang. It's more like, you know, the body can't live without the mind. Reality can't exist without perception, nor can perception exist without reality. They're completely intertwined. And I think this is what makes life very fun and very interesting, because it's ever-changing. It's got a form of dynamic equilibrium. We can invent stuff in the physical plane that previously only existed in our mind. And I think that's about what application is. Nikola Tesla talked about it, and he was trying to correct Thomas. Was it Thomas Edison who made the light bulb? I forget which one it was.
It was Thomas Edison that wanted everything to be on direct current.
Yeah. Okay. So, with alternating current, Thomas Edison, I think he electrocuted an elephant in stage to show how deadly alternating current was. My point was that Thomas Edison, I think, had a saying that says it's 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration.
1% perspiration, right.
Yeah. And Nikola Tesla
said... The inventor's creed.
Yeah, and Nikola Tesla said, that's BS. It's actually 99% inspiration, 1% perspiration. I'm far more inclined to agree with Nikola Tesla, because when you get a really brilliant idea, a totally out there one, and then you start putting work into it, it develops a life of its own, and it doesn't actually take an awful lot of work in order to keep it going, right? That's where the inspiration comes in. Yeah. And so these are really important things, because it doesn't matter how inspired you are, if you don't put in that 1% inspiration, you're not going to be able to create anything, right? Like, I know, let's take music, for example. I'm a musician. I've got an album out, and I've only been recording off and on for about a year with my bandmate. And I met some guys at a barbecue last weekend. One had been writing poetry for 10 years and hadn't published a damn thing. One who had been making music for 11 years and hadn't published a damn thing. Now, when I make music, when I jam, I do something that a lot of musicians don't. I record myself. I record our jams. And then,
right,
once that inspiration, once all the words and the tones and the guitar changes and what have you that we just do naturally off the top of our heads have been recorded, then we can listen back to what it is we've done. Okay, it's like the waveform collapsing, you know, the songs and the melodies and what have you come out, and you've got it recorded, and then you've got something. You've got something whole, something there that you actually can work with. Then you write down all of these lyrics. Then you make these little notes and judges about where all the guitar tone changes are. Maybe change a few tones there. Maybe add a bridge or that kind of thing. See, you've got the inspiration that gives you your building blocks right there, but you do actually have to sit down and work at things a little bit in order to perfect them, in order to get them publishable, that kind of thing. Most artists don't do that. Because they feel that
unless you're a super freak like Tesla was, and so brilliant that you could do complex experiments in your mind. I mean, that would be why Tesla would be 99% inspiration and 1% perspiration.
But the thing is, it's about thinking before you do things, right? Yeah, he was absolutely brilliant, okay, because he could think about things and then mull it over in his mind and then go and do an experiment in the real world just to check that what he was thinking about in his mind was being correct, and it turns out that he was correct. But the thing is, he didn't know 100% that he was correct until he built that device that achieved that particular effect that his mind told him it could.
I'm going to use Tesla and him perceiving that in his mind and putting that experiment in his mind and then physically showing that it would work. Did his perception
create
a reality?
Collapsing the wave. Yeah, but that's called collapsing the wave function. When you can physically take things out of the perceptual realm and put them into reality by working on them, right? That's how important reality is, because you can change what other people can see. If you're thinking about something, you're only changing what you can think, what you can see in your own mind. Nobody else can see it. Nobody else can hear it unless you tell them or show them. The reason why you choose to bring things into reality, the reason why you choose to construct things, make things, or change things, is because you're trying to improve the world around you, either for yourself or for others. Now, that can be done in a selfish way, where the elite will improve the world situation for themselves by seizing the issuance of all currency. They concocted a scheme, then they implemented it. It didn't mean the scheme existed without them implementing that, though.
Right, but again, that goes back to that good and evil. They had the perception to do something diabolical and evil, and then they made it a reality. They perceived it, then they created a reality.
See, now you just hit on the most important thing. You can perceive something and then make it a reality, okay? Not before, not during, but afterwards. Just like the observer.
Right.
The observer stops the wave functioning from having variance. This is what we're capable of doing with our actions in reality, is making things the way we want them to be and changing everything else as a result. However, again, as I reiterate, it's not magical, and it doesn't mean that reality doesn't exist or that perception is all powerful. Which I think is the trap that some people fall into, that they think if they ignore all bad things. Okay, let's say we talk about Rothschilds, Rockefellers, chemtrails, whatever bunch of conspiracy theories that you can think of that are either enslaving us or killing us as we speak. Now,
right.
Some people, and I've literally seen this, they say that because you're focusing on it, you're giving it power. Let me get this straight. I'm focused on destroying, exposing, and elaborating and understanding something, therefore it becomes more powerful, and so powerful, in fact, that I could never stop it, understand it, or do anything to change it. That is insanity. That is insanity, okay? That is schizophrenia. Schizophrenia is when you believe something, but there is absolutely no proof of any kind and no congruence in the things that you believe and see in your head and the real world. When you focus on something, you can actually change it. Okay, that's what Tesla reckons. That's what everybody else who's ever accomplished anything in their life of any kind has done. Even people who don't believe that their actions have consequences, ironically enough, still make actions and have consequences to those actions all the live long day. But they just don't believe
That could go back to the physics of the butterfly effect.
Elaborate.
Are you familiar with the butterfly effect?
Yeah, but I don't see how it relates to this specifically.
Well, if an action like a butterfly fluttering its wings on one side of the world can congrue and grow into like a huge wind or a tornado on the other side of the world.
Yeah, but the thing is, again, range of factors. Was it one butterfly that beat his wings, or was it a whole swarm of butterflies that beat their wings? And then a high ridge pressure system that caught these slight gusts, which managed to move the clouds in a particular direction, and an extra sunspot from the sun gave those clouds more energy, and that there was a cold patch within the water or something of that nature, which changed the course of the storm to go in a different direction, and so on and so forth. It's not butterfly flaps his wings, then tornado occurs, okay? It's butterfly flaps his wings, which are pretty inconsequential, and then there's all these other snowball effects that happens that are completely separate from the butterfly itself. To blow that by going up, let's find that butterfly, okay? Let's squash it, because it's making hurricanes, bro. You see?
Right.
You know? You can't just eliminate the butterfly and therefore eliminate...
If you did eliminate that butterfly, would you eliminate the effect, or would it come up by some other means?
Well, I'm suggesting there's no proof or evidence to actually suggest that a butterfly can cause a hurricane, no matter how many snowball effects there are. All right? Physically speaking, you know, explain to me the physics of a butterfly clapping its wings, and all of a sudden a big tornado coming down and demolishing, like, Oklahoma City. Explain to me the physics of it.
Well, it would be the cause and effect of starting a reaction or like a set of dominoes tumbling.
But the thing is, you don't know what the second domino is.
I think the butterfly effect is pretty far-fetched myself. It just rang true to what you were saying. It just popped in my head. I mean,
you know what's better than the butterfly effect? It's the harp effect. okay? You heat up the atmosphere, and you move clouds, and you make a storm. All right?
Well, yeah.
See?
Microwave on the atmosphere and move jet streams around experimentally and see if, I mean, it's just an experiment. I mean, you know, that's not going to affect weather or anything.
Yeah. But you see, the difference between a theory of the butterfly effect versus the reality of HAARP.
Of HAARP.
Okay? Which is far more stronger? Which is far more predictable? Which is proven time and time again to be effective at doing what it says that it can do? Whereas neither you nor I could come up with any actual physical measurable evidence that the butterfly effect is real. All right? So this is, again, the perception of the butterfly effect versus the reality of HAARP. And you see which one trumps the other? Because one's a perception that ain't based on reality. The other one is a real device that came out of somebody's perception and then real actions to create the device. You know? The horse does not get pulled along by the cart. It's the other way around. But the thing is, neither of them would be in motion had they not been hooked together. Horse would just be...
All right, hold on. Someone's got their hand up. I think you're going to know who this person is, Vinny. Is this Sheila?
Is
Sheila?
Alive, or...
Who's this?
Brandon from NWO.
Oh, Brandon! What's going on, my friend?
Not much, brother.
Not much. So what do you think of our little discussion of reality with myself and the wonderful Vinny Eastwood?
Yeah, man, I'm always one for questioning reality and also, questioning the stratospheric, ionospheric type of geoengineering that's going on. So you grabbed my attention with a couple things. But to stick more to the topic, I just wanted to kind of throw something in there. As you guys were speaking of perceptions and reality, I like to say that our perception of reality, not saying, any personal one person, but as a society, our perception of reality is a constructed one. And, as what I mean by this is that, you can even look at, like what I discussed on the, while you were sleeping last night, I was discussing, the early forms of, automatic control of thought over another person's head via, the Hertz method or what have you. But, again, with the advancements of that science and the advancements of control and predictive programming, that type of thing through the television, for instance, predictive programming right now would not exist, and we would never have been as subservient as we would with 9/11 if it wasn't a steady stream of perception that they're feeding us. So, really, our actions and our outcomes, the good versus the evil thing that you guys are talking about, that type of thing, a lot of that is, again, a constructive perception, I guess you could say. So, I just kind of wanted to throw that little line out there and see where you guys went from there, because I was listening to you.
Here's a good point there to discuss, I think. What level of influence does mind control have on collective consciousness? And
thank you.
Is it really collective consciousness if somebody's mind controlling everybody?
Exactly. Thank you.
It's collective. Exactly. It's group. That's groupthink, silo mentality. That ain't collective consciousness. It's collective brainwashing.
Exactly right.
Okay, let me ask you this. Why have you on, Brandon Council? Thanks for calling in, and Vinny. Now, if you have someone that is getting this technology, is planting thoughts or sounds in their mind. Is it real? Because they perceive it's real, isn't it?
Well, I think
No. It's not because they perceive it that makes it real. It's because it's actually real and it's a piece of technology and it has a measurable effect on people being so freaking stupid.
To more expand on that too, the collectiveness of what they are, their brain is attributing to, shows in their personality and that person's actions. You know what I mean? So then again, it would come back to that, you know, the observer, the person who is observing that. But you know, it doesn't always have to be the, you know, I like to call it low tech technology, because there's really not anything high tech that they use, unless we're talking about, you know, scalar type technologies. But you know, even when you turn on the television, you know, the television, you know, was constructed, you know, for that specific purpose, to influence another's behavior in one way or another, or make them acceptable and okay to things, you know, the preconditioning factor. So even when you turn on your television, you are, you know, slipping into a state of almost hypnosis. You're slipping into a state of consciousness where your subconscious is always more aware than what you are actually perceiving.
Yeah. Now, we're creators. We're not gods, are we? Okay? There's a hell of a lot of things that we can create, and many, many things that we just can't. We don't have the ability to just yet, right? And I think this is the important difference between the whole perception versus reality argument. And in fact, doesn't it get a bit repetitious? Because when you constantly hear your perception, your perception, your perception, or your reality, your reality, your reality, it produces kind of like a confusion field, which is in itself its own alleged butterfly effect, because a whole bunch of different people around that are listening to this radio show right now will be giving different interpretations. Now, here's one thing that I do notice, however, about those who I've had arguments with online sometimes, unlike you, Austin, in these arguments, is they get really flustered, they get really angry, they start accusing me of thinking this or that. You know, the most useless conversations in the world are the one where I don't know you, but I tell you what you're thinking, and you don't know me, and you presume to tell me what I'm thinking. So it's two people who have no idea who each other is or what each other's thinking, and it's the only part of the conversation that even exists. That's stupid. How about we listen and we let our beliefs get changed as the progress in the conversation goes on, right? That way, we're actually working in congruence. We're reaching a conclusion. We're making something happen, right? This is the physical action that we're taking that's allowing both of our different perceptions to collapse and coexist together. And I think that's the most important thing to remember about perception versus reality, is the coexistence of them, not the denial of one or the other.
All right. Well, that goes to perception equals reality, and reality is equal to your perception of it. And you're right, Vinny. You can't really separate the two, because they're intertwined in the symbiotic dance that they do.
Yeah, but you realize that, Austin. These people that I'm arguing with don't realize that. They think that if they think something, it happens. Okay, they think I want the dishes to be done, that they automatically get done somehow by some magical tooth fairy. It's not.
Well, no, and I'm not saying that. I'm just saying.
I know that you're not.
You got a sink full of dirty dishes, and then either you have to go into motion, physical motion, load a dishwasher or hand wash them. They're not just going to magically become clean because you wish them to.
The New World Order is not going to magically stop being evil just because you ignore the fact that they are.
I was wondering if I could jump in on the dishwashing thing for a second. I was just going to say something very similar.
He must be a really good husband if he wants to do.
You're saying about, you know, washing dishes and stuff, and like people actually have to take the action to do it. Like, it's not just going to get done just because you think it's going to get done. And you know, I think that's kind of, you know, like what you said with the New World Order or whatever, but I like to call it the Old World Order. But that relates to the lack of responsibility here in America by the average American inhabitant over the last 100 years, who has consistently ignored everything, you know, from, you know, senators, governors, what have you. But people of, you know, office, of political office, when they're sitting there telling You know, the people in the 1950s and 60s that, hey, you know, the CIA is operating in this manner or that manner, just for example, that. And they say you can't just blame one factor of government. And the argument is that, you know, the people who want this change figure that it'll happen if they just gang up on one thing. But in actuality, like you were saying, in order to get the dishes done, you have to get up and do it. And I think that that's, you know, that you know, goes back to the responsibility. You have to have the responsibility and the motivation to go ahead and do that. Otherwise, most people just seem kind of comfortable in their cell.
Yeah, well, I think it's power, okay? It's about power. I have the power to take responsibility to get up, and I have the power to make those dishes get done, okay? You know what they say about with great power comes great responsibility? Never a truer word was said. Americans now have the responsibility to get... Americans now have the opportunity to get educated, to throw off the bonds of these globalist banks to scum, to resist police brutality. They have the ability to get the GMO foods out of their food supply. They have the ability to stop McDonald's from selling them soft-kill bioweapons. They have the ability to shut down the corrupt officials within the FDA that approve dangerous drugs that have now caused the greatest suicide epidemic in human history. They have those abilities. They have that power. Right.
But the elite are invested.
Can I finish?
Yeah, go ahead and finish, and then I got to go to commercial break. I got to pay my sponsors.
All right. So the elite realize that we have all that power, so they educate us to not be responsible, so that we won't change their plans for us.
Well, they count on our apathy, really. And there's a lot of people here that can actually conceive what they're doing, and we're going to fight them. We're going to put together a plan of action. I see you with your hand up, 778. I'm going to get to you after the break. Brandon, Vinny, stick around, guys. Let me pay some sponsors. I'll be back in a few minutes, guys. Oh, yeah. Educate against the police state. I'm going to bring back in my good friend Vinny Eastwood from the Vinny Eastwood Show. We've got Brandon Council back from While You Were Sleeping in NW Radio. And another friend of ours, Sheila Zielinski from the Weekend Vigilante here on Freedomizer Radio.
Hey, fellas, what's up?
Hot and live.
Hot and live, hey? Well, I have a little question for you, boys. So, you're using this term collective consciousness, and really is a spin-off of collective unconsciousness. I mean, everybody here probably knows it's an analytical psychological term of Carl Jung. He was this. I don't know if you know this. Does anybody here know much about Carl Jung?
No, apart from the ironic fact that he's kind of old now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for that wave of information. Well, so Carl Jung was a psychiatrist, and he really changed the way that the human psyche worked. This was a long time ago. For those who've never heard of him, he was a little bit of a progenitor, if you want, a foremost pioneer of dream analysis, and he worked a lot with Sigmund Freud. And they really started giving, assigning meaning to dreams. And, I mean, in many ancient traditions, dreams were considered to be messages from the gods. Now, keep in mind, he did a lot of work with Freud. So, I mean, we're dealing, as you guys know, when we're fighting the New World Order, we're dealing with a lot of Luciferian, occultic, sinister elite, which brings me back to Carl Jung. As I mentioned above, he was, you know, considered this spiritual thinker, but he had very lofty ideas. But a lot of this is, no, if people research this, can go back to, it has nothing to do with Judaism or Christianity. It's very deep, occultic, black Eastern mysticism. So, I mean, it's just, we need to be careful of these terms that we throw around. I think that's my personal thought, because he was deeply involved with very heavily black Luciferian occultic origins. And I think that, you know, we have to ponder for a minute. We're trying to fight these sinister Luciferian occultic kinds of, you know, hucksters, and yet we're throwing around terminology that they throw around in their little black circle rings. And I think that's just something to be very much aware of. I think we have to be aware of the kind of terminology that we use.
I think that you're right, and we do need to understand words and the things that we're saying more importantly. But I've said for a long time, I mean, you probably don't disagree with any of the things we've actually said on this, but you're just calling in to elaborate on that one particular term. And I've said for a long time that my generation's problem is that we read between the lines so much that we miss the lines themselves. We miss out on those important lessons because we're too busy nitpicking about the frickin' details and not wanting to put the whole picture and puzzle together.
And this is true. I mean, it's true the devil is in the details, but you have to look at things in the perspective of what's really in front of you. And the main thing, and you're right, I mean, I'm guilty of this, we're all guilty of this. We look at something staring us in the face, and we're trying to peek around the corner and nitpick what's behind it.
You know, it's like that joke. Why did the blonde? Oh, what do you do when a blonde chucks a grenade at you? You pull out the pin and throw it back. Or I think what would actually be more congruent is why did the blonde jump over the glass wall to see what was on the other side? You see what I'm saying here? Is that
as a blonde, I have no idea what you're saying.
I'm blonde too. I'm blonde too, so neither do I.
Anyway, where I was going with this is, again, you know, the term again, like...
What's your definition of just consciousness? Not collective unconscious or collective consciousness, but what is consciousness itself to you?
Well, to me, I mean, we can get into a lot of defining definitions and really putting our own personal spin on it. I think that our consciousness is just a really being aware. And personally, I mean, as a Christian, I'm a Christian person. I believe that we're spiritually led. So people that are Christians, I mean, anybody can call themselves a Christian, and that's a whole other topic. But I do believe that it's our awareness. It's the spiritual awareness that guides our spirit, soul, body, mind. That's what I believe consciousness is. If you're doing things unconsciously, being trained as a psychologist, I have a master's degree in psychology, so I worked in the industry for years, and I have a lot of problems with it. I have a lot of problems where psychology has sprung from, where it stems, who is at the very, who's the progenitors of these kind of psychoanalysis. I mean, if you get into some Freudian...
The word's not progenitor, it's progenitor.
I said the progenitor of this movement was Freud and Jung.
Yeah, and of course these were madmen, right? And I find it very interesting that Freud is a near rhyme with fraud, because it's precisely what he was in a lot of cases. He was a coke-snorting, womanizing, frickin' fraud. Came up with a whole bunch of lies and BS, and people believed him. And later on, his little nephew, Edward Bernays, wrote the book Propaganda, and in the 20th century, everything changed. Family units got broken apart. All of this obsession with material objects, not actually giving a frack about your community or your family or your country anymore. No, it's about getting your next car. It's about getting your next home in the suburbs. And it went on to getting your next piece of technology, like your fridge, your oven, and then it became your new computer, and then it became your new Xbox, your PlayStation, and then it became your new iPhone. What's next? Well, is there any end to the placation of actually achieving real happiness, because the people who are trying to sell us real happiness are simply crafting commercials to mind control us so that we'll do things for our entire life that doesn't make us happy? How are they able to do this?
No.
Because they're psychologists. They know what makes your mind work, and they use it for their own ends, rather than helping
right down to the flicker rate on your television sets, more so here in the United States than you in New Zealand, Vinny. These flicker rates, you can watch them. You can watch them draw a kid in, and it changes their whole consciousness. I mean, it's amazing. You know, the average American, it has a TV on in front of them 8.1 hours a day. Think about that. That's an average. So that's one third of your life being a serf and a slave, one third of your life sleeping, and the other third of your life being programmed in front
of a box. Austin, when I interviewed Jim Mars, that's the first thing he said is, I said, you know, how can we defeat this? He said, I'll tell you, the first thing you do is you throw that damn noise box out the window. So he did. He did say, get rid of your television. That's the first thing people have got to do to snap out of their dystopic trance, is get rid of that, you know, mind-numbing television set. So I agree with that.
Yeah. And as William Casey, CIA director in 1981, was famously quoted, we'll know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false.
Right. And again, it goes back to around the horn to what we're discussing, is everyone is perceiving this new reality, and it's real, but it's a bunch of shit.
Yeah, exactly. The dark occultists have figured out that they can control people's perceptions. They can then enforce their own reality without people trying to stop it.
Well, exactly. I mean, look around. Look at Jay-Z. He's the guy's a total Luciferian, admitted Luciferian, flashing Illuminati signs, and everybody in the audience. All these little drones, they go along because it's cool.
Yeah, and of course, what they did is they created a celebrity culture, and I think this celebrity culture also still exists in the truth movement. People believe that once you go out of normal talk radio, you know, back when you thought mainstream about things, I used to, and thank God I don't anymore.
Sure.
But what happens is you think that because you're jumping out of that old paradigm into a new paradigm, that you're not dragging with you, like the tail of a comet, all those bad experiences, all that misinformation, all that disinformation, all that mislearning of reality and perception. So even if you were to watch something that clearly defines and incredibly well documents the definition of perception and reality and how it all works in the universe and everything like that, you wouldn't even be able to make sense of it, because you're still processing how much of a douchebag the system programmed you to be at a previous time, okay? I got programmed in public education since I was, like, what, 5 years old, all the way through to 18?
That's a good point, is from the time you were born, you've been programmed, you've been conditioned, and it's hard to break that paradigm. I mean, this is deep-seated conditioning, going back to something that Sheila knows about, the psychology. I mean, we're programmed from children. Girls are shoved dolls. Boys are shoved trucks. I mean, that's just how it is.
That's right.
I mean,
and it's all programming. Now, if you've got a program running and it's a mind control program, it's kind of like being an alcoholic. First, you've got to realize that you're under mind control.
Right.
Isn't that a profound realization right now?
Stephen Malio on that slavery video at the end, are you beginning to see the chains now? To break free from this, you have to see the prison you're in.
Well, that's right. And this is why people get really depressed when somebody explains to them and documents the many ways that have proven in reality that you're a slave. And your perception has been so far off base that whole time that it's like falling off a perception cliff. And you go through all the traditional stages of grief. You go through depression, you go through denial, you go through anger, and then eventually you go through acceptance.
Vinny and Austin, do you guys, you know, It's funny because a lot of us talk about this zombie nation on our shows. I mean, doctors are telling us. I mean, look at the headlines that stress is reaching, especially across North America and worldwide, pandemic levels. You know, I don't know if it's normalcy bias or cognitive dissonance or both or whatever, but people are clearly failing to take notice that tens of millions of people in the Western world are dropping like flies from illness, depression, self-destruction. I mean, this is a pretty dire state of affairs. You've got suicide surpassing car crashes as a leading cause of death for Americans. And even more disturbing, in the world's greatest military, quote unquote, there's more U.S. soldiers died this year by suicide than in combat. So you've got half of U.S. employees suffering chronic debilitating stress, depression, and, you know, whatever, anxiety, you know, and then everybody hopped up on SSRI depressant. And these aren't just, you know, oh, I'm taking a nice little antidepressant. These are the highly controversial mood-altering psychiatric drugs of these suicidality warnings of the FDA. So now you take that, these tens of millions of people hopped up on God knows what kind of psychiatric drugs and big pharma, and they've got 90 million American adults with an alcohol or drug problem. So when you step back and you take a macro view of this, pretty soon a pretty bleak picture emerges. We've got a nation of zombified drug takers with hundreds of millions dependent on one toxic substance or another. And, I mean, this is to help them deal with the stresses and problems of life. And with so many people on meds, I think we can honestly, Vinny and Austin, say, and Brandon, if you're still on with us, that this is a zombie nation. And people are so out of touch with themselves, with no reality, that they think they have to use these big pharmas in order to go back to normal. Well, that's not only, you know, it's not only perpetuating the problem, but it clouds them to what is going on, the false flag attack, the systematic dehumanization, the, you know, full spectrum draconian measures. I mean, if this isn't a dire state of affairs, I don't know what is.
Well, can I make a point? It's a zombie nation for sure, and it's one with the information war. And how do you kill a zombie? You shoot him in the head with the information. And just think about this. Despite the fact that this zombie virus is out there infecting everybody, there's still people waking up. There's still people coming back to life. There's still people shirking off and getting off the drugs and getting onto the organic food and getting onto the alternative talk radio circuit and whatnot, isn't it? It's actually a reverse pandemic in a way, a virus of truth and of honor is starting to reemerge amidst all this zombification. Much like in the series The Walking Dead, everybody was an ordinary person, didn't really care about each other, but then they suddenly realized that facing all of these zombies, that they needed each other a lot.
Yeah,
and not just their lives for each other.
All they had was each other. And you know, going back to what you brought up, which is a good point, Sheila, is it seems like you ever had a cat and you like take something, you tie something to the end of the cat's tail, and the cat just keeps spinning in circles chasing the tail. That's what's happening. We have this programming, we have all this crap on TV, all this conditioning. Then we feed you drugs. So you can avoid the programming and avoid this dire reality, this dire perception that these oligarchs are taking. Then you need more drugs, and we're on that vicious treadmill in a circle. It's time to step off, folks. Get off these damn drugs. These psychotropic drugs are poison. Why the hell do you guys think that Xanax is in one out of three cabinets across the nation here in the United States? Why do you think this drug is designed to be 31 times more addictive than heroin?
Yeah.
Real quick, I wanted to add that, you know, the optics of a cat is they see in trails. You know, like you put a little light on the ground and, you know, they chase it. The reason why they chase it, you know, if you ever, you know, I personally haven't taken acid, but I hear that, you know, when people trip, they see things in trails, and the optics of a cat are just like that. They see everything in trails. So,
well, Austin, you know,
that'd be hilarious. Put a little light on the end of their tail and do that. Oh, God.
Oh, no.
Austin, really,
interesting. The laser points are.
I wanted to throw this in there, Austin. You were mentioning Xanax, and I think it's important that to know. And people can go Google this. You don't have to take our word for this. But you know, as a person who could write out, these prescriptions for various kinds of SSRIs, serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or any kind of newer, the newer class of these psychotropics, it's really interesting because Xanax actually has the highest rate of suicide amongst all these antidepressants, and which is fascinating is typically people that were on it complained of complete confusion, complete decreased inhibition. So, I mean, think about that for a sec. When you have complete stifling of your inhibitions, and on top of that, depression was the onset of depression was even more virulent and fervent than it was when they weren't on it. So they had overwhelming feelings of suicide. So tell me, this is so bizarre that people get on this stuff and they don't realize that the side effects are often 35 times higher than anything they had to start out with. And what it does is over time, but just over time, people need to understand that these things are not meant to go on long term. And some people end up on them for 3 and 5 and 10 years. But over time, they actually totally wreak havoc on your neurotransmitters, so that eventually it tricks your brain into thinking it produces serotonin, and it doesn't. It stops. So your body actually over time stops producing natural serotonin, and then you're really screwed. That's a technical term, by the way.
To bring this back full circle, if you're depressed because of a drug, and you don't think to yourself, am I depressed because I'm on this drug? And then stop taking the drug, and then stop getting depressed, and then not wind up committing suicide. All right, that's a good outcome, isn't it? All right, it's called reality analysis. Have a look at all these things. What am I thinking? Are these thoughts really my own? Is there anything that I'm consuming in my body, whether that be drugs or sugars or fats or salts, that could be influencing my brain? Am I drinking enough water? Have I slept enough? Those are the very simple, basic starting points before you start even wondering whether or not you're thinking clearly about something to make a correct decision about what actions to take. Now, that's where the perception needs to come into it, man. Can you even understand if your thoughts are even your own? Firstly, before you start putting things into action. Because right now, I see a lot of people all over the world thinking that their thoughts are their own, when the reality is they're just being mind controlled and their perceptions have been warped on purpose so that they will forget all of their personal power, all of their ability to rid these fallacies from their lives.
Well, yeah, they're more worried about keeping up with the Kardashians than Monsanto spraying their crops that they're going to eat in full chemical protective gear.
But Austin, I think it's not their fault, all right? So let's say you've got a genius and he's a liar, and you're a small child, maybe like you're 15 or whatever, you're kind of wet behind the ears, you don't know the world or whatever, and he tells you these lies and he gets you involved with a business opportunity or something only to rip you off. Is it your fault that you got manipulated by a genius? I don't think so, man. It's kind of an unfair fight.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Well, it's like blaming a midget for getting beat up by Muhammad Ali or something like that. You were just too weak. You brought that on yourself. He floated like a butterfly and hung like a bee right in the eye, Mr. Midget Man.
All right, Vinny, we got to wrap it up. I want you to promote your show.
It's the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood as in go ahead. Make my news.
All right. And Brandon, I want you to promote your show, my friend.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, thank you. Every Friday night, 11 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Pacific. That'll be 12 a.m. midnight every Friday. While you're sleeping, NWO Truth Radio at Blog Talk Radio. Thank you.
Check them out. It's a great show. And Sheila Zielinski, I want you to promote your show, too.
You can check it out every Thursday from 3 to 6 Pacific Standard, 6 to 9 Eastern Standard, and you can go to weekendvigilante.com to check out my handiwork.
All right. And thank you guys all for chiming in. I got to wrap it up. Thanks to the listeners. And without you guys, we have nothing. Thank you guys all. And we'll see you again this Wednesday. Lisa and I will see you again this Wednesday for the Gorilla Radio, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Thanks again, guys.